always nice to feel part of the long history of humanity and spiritual endeavors. So that little request goes back 2,500 years and has been done by generations and generations and generations of people, all kinds of different traditions. So we're really part of a very old and deep tradition. In fact, I was up just when I came in, Brock was told me a joke about a men's group, a cartoon about a men's group. And so he said the fuel guys used to get together as a men's group, eight guys, and they said, what do you talk about? Well, mostly we talk about that we would like to be playing poker, actually. But I actually was invited to a men's group once. And strange, because, you know, as a monk. So in Kamloops, near the monastery, and the men's group, there was about eight or nine guys, and a few of them I'd met at the monastery, but it was I think there was a strange arrival. You know, I don't have families or wives to talk about or those kind of jobs or... So they're all looking at me. I said, this is nothing new for me, actually. I belong to the largest and oldest men's group in the world. You know, just, so all I do is live with other monks. You know, it's not an unusual idea, a men's group, you know. And then there's a woman's group called the nuns, you know, so. So, yes, it's a very deep and beautiful tradition. It's nice to think about this chain of information being handed on generation after generation, overlapping from an early time, and how modern. When I read the teachings of the Buddha and the problems and difficulties and life encounters that people had at the time, I just think, wow. Nothing's changed. It's just as could be yesterday. They're having the same issues in their lives. Humans. Modern humans have been around now for tens of thousands of years, and we're not that much different at all. And the issues remain the same. So, but perhaps our only distinguishing thing is that this... our particular time is a little more accelerated and a little more distracted with our the speed that we can get around at and the amount of information and things. So we don't really have that gentle space. When I was growing up, basically everything seemed to shut down on Sundays. You know, that was rolled up the sidewalks and no stores were open. So it's a very rapid change in terms of like 24/7 kind of lifestyle. So we have to, somewhat artificially, we have to find our way back to the appropriate time and time and pace that we as humans really evolved under. Could say in the last 20 or 30 years, 40 years, the acceleration has become somewhat inhuman. And so we have to find, well, and we become used to it, so we don't know what human is anymore. So to sit quietly in a room like this is very human. I love to talk to people about, in different spiritual traditions, what they did and in their... Like I talk to people, Russian Orthodox, you know, who were raised in Russia at the in the Russian Orthodox Church, and I said, "Well, what did you do, and how did it work?" So a woman telling me about that, they would go to church and it would be 6 hours long, and standing, there's no pews, And it would just be, you'd wear your, because the, and the icy cold stone church, and you'd have to wear big, heavy fur coats. And then it'd be monks and priests and chanting and swinging these incense burners. And then there would be a lot of chanting on and on, chanting, you know, like getting it almost in like in a trance. But, you know, this big, empty, stone, cold church in, dressed in furs and the smells of incense 6 hours long. And they just thought, can't wait for church, yeah. The early Puritans coming across to the east coast of the U.S., their services were also about 6 hours long. And they had a, I hope, but I presume, but I hope you haven't actually heard of tag team wrestling. Anyway, tag team wrestling, something you don't want to know about, but if you were around in the 50s and 60s, you probably know about this stuff. And it started with Puritan ministers trying to fill up 6 hours of preaching. So you talk and you run out of gas in about an hour and a half, and then you have to, the next preacher comes up and you touch hands, tag team, you tag, and then they start preaching so that you can get through 6 hours of preaching. Because they didn't have a meditative tradition. They didn't have a silent tradition. They just talked. And they also, of course, you had to face the possibility of sloth and torpor. So they had a monitor for that. And that monitor, so they would be walking down an aisle like this. The monitor had to have a stick about 14 feet long to get into the pews. And on one end is a rabbit's foot. Very soft, gentle rabbit's foot. On the other end is a string with a wooden ball on the end. And for the ladies, because the ladies sat on one side and the men sat on the other side, so if a lady was gently snoring, then he could reach in and tickle her nose with that rabbit's foot. And then on the other side, if the men, that was for the wooden ball. So if the man is, and then you can just drop that wooden ball on their head. So, you know, these are very interesting traditions, but there's all, like, you know, not for, these days, I've been invited quite a few times to give talks at Unitarian churches, United churches, this and that. The Unitarians always say, 20 minutes, just 20 minutes. Keep it to 20 minutes. What happened to our attention span? I mean, really? I can hardly say hello in 20 minutes. Yeah, sometimes I do. I see them looking at their. I haven't told you the secret of enlightenment yet. Do you want to not be enlightened? So this in fact goes right back to the time of the Buddha. It's a really interesting. He has people coming to him, a group of people, and they Reverend Sir, we're so happy to see you, and we are householders, and we came to hear a little bit of this. And so he gives them a little bit of advice, and then they say, "Well, we got to be going now, you know, back." He says, "Just so," and they depart. And then he says to Ananda, his attendant on the side, "It's too bad they didn't stay another 10 minutes. They would have attained enlightenment." Yeah, but householder life, busy, busy. So. It's been going on for 2,500 years, but I think it's accelerated now. If you go and see your friends who don't do this kind of thing, and you can just tell them, yeah, where were you today? I was at church for about 8 hours. Yeah. So, so you're in the middle of it. You're not just 6 hours. I'm telling you about this 6 hours, and you think, how does anybody do it for 6 hours? You're here all day long, and then the next day too. So, and you think, what? Nothing to it, you know. So, this is the human. This is such a, you know, important feature of human life. You cannot ignore. This is a dimension of every grouping of humans throughout history, as far back as we can go. Even the cave paintings and 30,000-year-old cave paintings. What are they about? They're religious expressions. They're magical expressions. They're expressed down underground in these cave paintings. They're observations of features of reality, important features of reality. So today, excuse me. Well, I thought it's shift from the breath. Of course, you can keep up the breath if you like. We spent the day on it yesterday, and you kind of feel a stillness coming over a period of a full day, and it's quite delightful, and that stillness. But I did promise to talk about the divine emotions, or as they're called, the divine abidings, places where you live, divine places to live. And that's really a clue that they're called the Brahma Viharas. And we had Tess talk about the that she, when she gave the invitation, that's the Brahma Sahampati is a divine being who is very interested in, thinks it's a very good thing that that the Buddha is able to communicate this. It's really, how do you become divine? How do you go and live in the divine? And so they're called the divine, the Brahma Vihara. Vihara is a mansion. So it's a place, a very spacious place where you actually live. You don't, it's not just some place you visit occasionally or have a moment of, but it's a place where you stay. And you're invited to realize that that's a dwelling place where you don't just drop in now and then, but you live there. It's where you live. So we live in all kinds of places, and some people live in broken down hovels. Now I'm talking emotionally, because that's actually where you don't live in the outside world, really. You live within your emotional structure. That's where your life is felt, and the feeling of life is everything. The thinking of life is just menus, but the feeling of life is where you live. So how you experience your body and mind, your emotional structures. Come in and find a chair. That's the important thing. And this is, you live within your body 24/7. You don't have a choice about that. And how does it feel in there? Are you living in a confined quarters? Is it comfortable, or is it uncomfortable? Is it drafty? Is it missing something? Is your head cold? Or is your body cold? So a hovel or a small, incomplete house is a life that is where the emotions are not cultivated properly. It's like, you know, the techno fix when people come and set up your air conditioning and your heater structures in your house, and then it doesn't work, and the settings are all off, and you're cooking when you shouldn't be, and you're cold when you shouldn't be, and you have no idea how to adjust the things because they were badly installed to begin with, or you got bad instructions. It's when the people come from tropical countries. They don't have thermostats in tropical countries. There's no heating system. So I'm amused by it. I talk to a lot of Canadian Thai couples. So man goes to Thailand, finds a Thai girl and marries her and comes back. They have some fairly uniform characteristics. When they find this place a godforsaken iceberg to begin with, but it's cold here. And then they discover the thermostat in the house. It's a magic thing that makes everything warm. And the higher you turn it, the faster it warms, right? Right? No, it doesn't. But they don't. They cannot get that principle. So their husband is, honey, if you turn it to 100, it doesn't heat up faster. It just, you know, it just keeps going and going to 100. But just put it to 70, and it will get to 70 just as fast, or 75 if you like. But it's, it just seems like if you just cranked it, it would go faster. But that's not the way furnaces work. So we have to learn how these structures work, and these are emotional structures as well, you know. So we have to learn how the controls work. And sometimes we would like to ignore that and get on with life, right? We'd like to ignore all the emotional and spiritual advice and just get on with life. Like, nobody else seems to have to bother with this stuff. But, you know, if you don't listen to the instructions and learn the skills and everything, you won't be getting on with life. There'd be something problematic, because life isn't out there. It's not out there. It's in here. Where else could it be? It's within this very body, just one, you know, one fathom in length. Right? That's it. That's the world. The world that you experience, the processing of the world, arrives through your eyes and your ears, your nose, your tongue, your touch, and in the thinking processes. This is the world. It's not out there. It arrives and is manifested within your structure, your neurological structure, your consciousness structures, your training structures, your emotional structures. This is where the world appears within you. It corresponds, they think. I mean, everybody's been guessing from the beginning of time of how much, when I'm looking at that forest, is that the real forest that I'm looking at, or is that, how much correspondence is there to the reality? That's an interesting hobby, philosophy. But in the end, we have to live with the world that we experience, and that we leave that for the scientific questions about what is the actual objective world, if there really is one. But we have a world, and we know, and that's the one we live in. So we are often just urged to get on with it, but that's we will have to stop and just, there was never time to do it right the first time, but there is always time to do it right the second time. So we take whatever time it takes to just reprocess, to learn the skills, and it's about skills. Because, you know, the snow blowing in the cracks through the wall, which I've actually lived in shacks like that. Like the gaps in the door, an inch and a half wide. The wind just whistling in. It's not, you know, maybe there wasn't time to plug it in the summer, but there's plenty of time in the winter. You will plug it, yeah. So this is whatever time it takes, whatever time in your life this is. There is time to find out how to live joyfully and comfortably. And these are the divine abidings. Spaciously, with the right kind of temperature. So the temperature is, we like it, as you probably all have discovered, is that it's delicious to be under a nice quilt. Only up to your neck, though, not covering your head. And then, because you can't breathe, and your head's too warm, so you like the nice little fresh air coming in, even if it's cool. Cool, fresh air. It's very sweet to breathe, to sleep by, and then but warm from your neck down, fully covered by the quilt. So your head, and in fact, the sort of the physical experience of the head is this cool, light, spacious. And but the body, your heart area, your emotional areas, you know, in the Indian tradition they talk about chakras and stuff, you know. We have words for this too. We talk about our heart and we get choked up, you know. You can feel a lump in your throat sometimes in a certain this is an emotional center, your throat, your heart, your gut feeling, your stomach, you know, you know, your heart sinks into your stomach, you know, this kind of thing. This is your emotional body. This has proper arrangements and proper temperature settings. The temperature setting from here down is warm, very warm and relaxed. You feel totally comfortable. You know, in the heart is being properly instructed. It's comfortable and warm. You feel intimately at home. You know, and when this is working right up here, it's lucid and breezy and air conditioned. It's cool and spacious. So actually, we spent the yesterday with the air element, and the instructions were breathe in and notice how cool it is when the air comes in and hits this into the nasal cavity. The outside air is cooler than the body, right? So you feel this coolness. It's not a science experiment. It's so that you can get the. It suggests something to you. So remember, it's also in induction. We're actually trying to make a feeling out of this. We're not just watching it. We're actually, the next instruction was to gladden the mind. So we're actually introducing emotional suggestions into this experience of breathing in the cool exterior air, letting it fill your head. So your whole head is actually being cooled down, you know, you're suggesting. In Thailand, in the forest tradition, so I'm, you know, kind of born and raised in Canada, and I spent a lot of time out in the forest and living and doing a lot of camping and stuff, so I kind of like a polar bear. And so when I went to Thailand, that was fine in the cold season. Everybody else is shivering and shaking. I'm kind of wearing a tiny little, my shoulders open and so forth. It's just about right temperature for me. But there's the hot season, where I turn into Frosty the Snowman and melt in a puddle on the, while everybody else is drinking hot tea at 105 degrees in the sala. I am just, and they don't seem to have a drop of sweat on them, the Thai monks, you know. I'm just melting. But they do have this thing, it's called magic oil. It's called Mo Singh, the magic oil of Dr. Singh. And it comes in a little bottle like that. I don't know what's in it, but you put it on your nose, around the rims of your nose, and it's menthol or something like that. So whenever you breathe in, it's like personal air conditioner. You've got a little air conditioner attached to your nose, because really, it's so suggestive that everything is, you feel like you're breathing cold air in, and it just like, oh, the whole room just got cooler, you know? Pure suggestion. But it works very well. So you understand that you are suggestible, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Fortunately, we're suggestible. We can transport ourselves into all kinds of different realms by suggestion. I mean, why do we feel like we feel? Why do we have insecurities, doubts, worries, and so forth? Could it have been some suggestions you got along the way sometimes, especially when you were young, you know, by giant authority figures telling you about reality? The absolute authority on reality tells you there's something wrong with you, or you're not a good person, or you're not behaving right. Very suggestible, moldable, right? So we know that, and it's time to remold skillfully, to undo advice from your 7-year-old friends on the school ground, or people who might not have been skillful in your life, including perhaps your parents. And so this is, we work with these things. We can create the cool, free, light sense of the mind, spacious, light, cool. That's the elements. And that is also equanimity. One of the divine abidings is equanimity. The divine, it's just a divine place to live, is the spacious, cool. You know, the windows are open, beautiful. Yesterday, during one of the sittings, the door got closed. And I could just feel the kind of the closeness of the room just rise through the sitting. And then then the rest of the sittings, the door was open, and it was just like, just this kind of openness. Eh? So you can feel it. Watch the quality of the of this part of your body, the head. Is the door, are the doors open? Is the spring breeze coming through? Is this plenty cool, or is there heat and intensity there? Is there a you need oxygen, you need the world, you need to be open. This is equanimity, serenely abiding at the higher elevations. The flowers up there in the high meadows are very small. They're just the size of your little fingernail. Just meadows of these little tiny flowers. But they're very, very beautiful. They don't grow very tall either, and it's, everything is slow growing up there, small but exquisite, small, exquisite, cool. And the city is far away. All the intensity of human relationships are far away, very... You're not lonely. You're feeling ease and distance and cool, as it should be, which is very important. The Buddha himself says that when he was raised in royalty, he said, we had three palaces. My family had three palaces, one for the rainy season, one for the hot season, and one for the cool season. So in the hot season, they went to the higher elevations, natural air conditioning up there. And then for the cool season, they went to the lower elevations. And then for the rainy season, they went, raised the house up. And they dwelled in different places during different seasons. So we have to understand there's parts of us, and some of, the, of us flourish at the higher elevations. But if we stay up there at night, we will, especially if we climbed up there in a nice little t-shirt enjoying the sun and so forth, and as soon as that sun starts to drop, you see how cold it gets up there. So then you need to go down to the ocean level, where the flowers are the size of your head, you know, the beautiful, big, lush flowers like in Victoria. I'm living in the, at 1,200 meters in the interior, so it's, the trees are small, the flowers are small, there's little wild strawberries that have the size of your little fingernail all over the place, but they're tiny little things. So when I come down here, I'm always exclaiming to people driving me around, whoa, look at this street. Do you just see this street? It's so lush and green and flowers and so forth. And they're usually, huh? You know, because you get used to it, right? There's two things that work very, very well. The low, warm, and lush beauty, and then there's the high, cool, fine, detached beauty. And these things are very good. So equanimity is the fourth sublime abiding. It's the house for the hot season. It's the place where you want to go when it's a little too heated. But then there's the cold season, and then you want the heart to be radiant and warm. A human nature does not do well without human warmth. So monks and nuns, the Buddha says, so I have monks and nuns who dwell in solitude, but day and night, continuously, they abide in loving kindness, experiencing warmth. So they're not lonely out there. They're not lonely living alone. They're full of warmth. And loving kindness is a great place to live. But you don't have to be 2 feet away from somebody for that experience to happen, because it happens within you. It doesn't happen in, it doesn't come from another person. It comes out of you. And if you want to, you got to find where that thermostat is. So you need to find how to warm yourself up. And at first, it can become your second nature. So if you practice it enough, it's with you without trying, but if it's not there, then you're going to have to figure out, how do I get it to start? Like, how do I find where the thermostat is? The exercise to find that is your imagination and in your memory. So you explore in your memory, look, sweep through your memory for times when you loved, when you just, not romantic love, but the warmth, love of friendship. And that's, you want to just dwell in those memories and find that feeling until it sweeps through your body, you know. I mean, you got a perfect workshop here. You have nothing else to do. It's very, lots of time to just go and find that. And it works very well both sitting and walking. So the Buddha says, whether standing, sitting, walking, or even lying down, loving kindness is the best in all the world. And you experience this, you cultivate this, bring it up on specifics, on maybe it was your little friends in school or your cousin or your pet, your cat or your dog or what. Just you're looking for objects which allow the feeling to arise, and then you say, oh yes, now I remember that. That's what that felt like. And the Buddha says, don't just. It's not something that just falls out of the sky. It's something that you actually have control over. You can fuel this. You can add to the fire. You can build it up. So cultivate it. Cultivate it. And let it well up, you know, fill the body. And you can also then use your imagination, spreading it out. How many other beings that you've never met and never will meet out there, but they all share so many of your own experiences. They're humans. Humans famously don't like to be hurt or to be harassed or pain or anything, like just like you. And they don't like to be injured. They don't like to die, things like that. They like to be safe. They like to be valued. They like humor. They like to laugh, like just like you. And so this is you. Spread this in your imagination out through the world. You see that you are one amongst multitudes. I suggest that even when another planet eventually will encounter beings, perhaps from other planets, they will also be like that. And the animals too. You notice your cat doesn't like to be whapped, but they do like to sit on your lap and purr like autumn. The cat at Brock and June's place. I talked to Autumn quite a bit last night. Meow, meow. So, pat. Yeah, they're quite universal because we had a cat look just like that at the monastery for quite some time. So I found all the special places that they like to be. They like that if you just behind the neck, you grab the loose fold of skin and just pull up a little bit on that. It's just like, mommy, I'm a kitten again. Not too much. And they just like, that was good. Do that again. They're all like, they're suckers for that. You know? This is what we have to realize. We're universal beings. We're not really all that different. We all appreciate these things. And Mother Nature has programmed us this way. And it's not good to ignore Mother Nature. She's very stubborn. Even if you're really crying and in a mess, she will not help you unless you listen to her. She will refuse. You'll see people in alleyways who will not listen to Mother Nature. Mother Nature will let them even die. She's like relentless. You either do it my way or it's the highway, you know. And so if your heart cracks open and you come back to this, you will be welcomed home with a great hug. But if you don't do it my way, I'll let you die. So this is our choice. We're going, this is being natural, listening to nature. And whenever you experience this emotion of loving kindness, you will be embraced. And you will just be, you will be home. A feeling of truly I am a citizen of this planet. You know, I'm not an alien. I'm not strange to this place. I am home. That's, that emotion tells you. It gives you a profound sense of relaxation, safety, and ease. And clears up a lot of things, including even the fear of death. It clears up a lot of things. You feel like it's okay to that the nature, that the fact that we pass away is, it's okay. We're warm and at home. It's all right. And then we need our space. We need our refreshment. We need the delight of the tiny flowers and the distance and the big picture, and that's equanimity, and that we climb to the higher meadows for that. And it's a great thing to go up to the higher meadows. You just like feel so alive. The air is so fresh up there, you know? So this is, we're moving back and forth between these two divine places. We're spending time in the, when we need to, we spend time in the cool, high alpine meadows, getting some distance from our lives and things like that. And in that quiet up there, we understand new things. We make new determinations to not let it get to us. And we feel, again, free and not afraid even to die. And then when we go back down to the warmth, we appreciate it all the more. We realize, oh, there is, you cannot truly be fully human without this warmth, loving kindness. It is welcome back to what it is to be truly a human. And you cannot truly be light and free and basically a philosopher unless you climb to the higher alpine meadows from time to time as well. So, and I believe that the old philosophers from the, you know, the Greek philosophers from the 5th century, and we have an inheritance that we study at the university of all kind, all our ideas and everything, but I don't think they were ever interested in ideas, actually. They were trying to say about the beauty of the higher alpine meadows and how refreshing it is to be up there, high, aloof, and looking at the little picture down. So that, to be a philosopher is really to be that, to feel, not to think, but to feel the clarity and sweetness of the higher places, spaciousness of the mind. And then, but to be truly this word cosmopolitan is also invented by a Greek philosopher. He said, I am, when you ask me, am I Greek and this and that, he says, I'm not. I'm a citizen of the universe. I'm a cosmos. Politan. So I am a citizen of the entire world. I am one with all beings. So we have these two possibilities, two decks within us, and they're both absolutely beautiful. And they're available. You can afford it by all means. You can't afford not to live these places. Too expensive to live in a leaky shack or in an overheated tenement slum or something like that. It's just too expensive. You can't afford it. But to live in a mansion is free. So we have the morning to dedicate to this. We have a few hours to. So I would just take some of these suggestions and work with them as we do some. It would take a half an hour for walking meditation. find your, if you were not here yesterday, just find a suitable 30 or 40 feet out there and walk back and forth. Not, in this case, paying so much attention to your body, but more cultivating the sublime and divine emotions of loving kindness. And then, you know, do that for maybe the whole walking meditation. Or you can do it the whole morning. If you want to just focus on that for the whole morning, that's fine. Or if you want to just try, what about those alpine meadows? I'd like to go there. What is that? That's the big view of life. That's the high view of life. Maybe I should just cultivate that. See what that feels like while I do walking and sitting through the day. So, okay, so we will now take the opportunity for the walking meditation, and that'll be till a quarter after 10, and we'll have a bell at that time. So.